CliffCentral.com. We are live. It is Friday morning, CliffCentral.com. Yo, Ben. Just by the way, an interesting thing that Ben brought up earlier about urinals in houses and how, you know, if guys were in charge, they would probably add urinals to the list of things that would make a house so much better.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very good point. Why is it, do you think, that this is not a regular thing? Why do you reckon that urinals aren't part of people's interior planning?
Well, I would say that if a woman sees a urinal, they'll get really freaked out. It's like, oh, it's so gross. And I think women have a big say in like what happens in the interiors of homes. So
yes, women's side off on these things, yeah.
So like, women can have the really nice bathrooms, okay? The nice toilet where they can go and do things. I know women don't poo, whatever they're doing there. Great.
No, of course.
But then I just think in a house, you should always have more than one toilet. You know, it's just something I've believed in, and I should really practice a bit more. But yeah, apparently
it's the key to a happy relationship. Well, I hate to be so navigatorial for more than the first hour of the show, because we've already done this, but I did think it required a little bit of conversation there, because people are asking, even the comment section, saying, why is it that nobody's thought of this before? It's truly a brilliant idea.
We need to have that. I think a guy should have his place where he just goes and has a piss. Simple as that. So you can have the pretty toilets, which has got like the potpourri or the whatever you want in there, the scented candles. And then there's just a place with a urinal. Just straight up urinal, small little bathroom, basin. It'd be brilliant.
There we go. By the way, while we're talking about bathrooms, are you very put off by bidets?
Yeah. I just think it's a bit too pompous. It's a bit too pompous.
You think? Yeah. Wash your ass after you've wiped your ass is unnecessary.
I'm sure it's great. I mean, you get people who've only ever lived in the bidet life, and that's great, you know, but it just feels a little bit too, I don't know, pretentious. I'd go urinal before I went bidet.
You see, Matthew says a choice between urinal and bidet, I bet the wife wins.
Well,
which
obviously
means
a
bidet.
Wife's going to choose the bidet because it looks fancy and it doesn't smell like pee.
You see, that's another thing. If you have a urinal in your house, do you have to buy those cakes that they put in there?
Pee mats, ice. Yeah,
suddenly it's a thing.
You've got to do that, obviously. And you must have quite a deep one. You know, don't go cheap on your urinal. I'm looking at a couple here actually. So if you spend less than 1,000 RON on your urinal, Gareth, you're right. These things aren't even that expensive. Now I've gone to Leroy Merlin for 744 RAND.
There we go. See? And now all you have to do is pay a plumber like an extra 1,000, 2,000. I don't know how much a plumber is going to be to do that.
I mean,
maybe 3,000.
So this one, the title of it is Urinal Olsen Ceramic, including kit and spreader. What would a spreader be?
A spreader. I don't know, but it doesn't sound very salubrious.
Yeah, spreader. I mean, look, the actual hardware is not too expensive. It's getting it plumbed in and working. So yeah, I just think we should maybe prioritize this in 2024.
It's terrific. The more people will start thinking this way, the better. So there's an interesting comment from somebody here. They say, "Are the only fancy houses they've ever been to with urinals have been owned by gay men? The women choosing the bathroom explains this."
Yeah.
So yeah, you see, because if you had gay guys, they wouldn't have a woman sign off on their interior decor. So,
and also,
or any of that.
If you have a urinal, no one will suspect you are sitting down to pee. So there's also that.
Mm.
That's
a good point.
There's nothing but pluses here. Yeah.
There we go. You won't have any of those suspicious looks from people going, "Oh, he's one of those guys who sits down." What do they call them? Sits and piss. Something
losers.
Like that.
Losers.
Oh, terrible. Okay, so a couple of other things that I wanted to talk about this morning before we get to Temba. I just saw this this week, and you know, we talk about Black Friday, and I understand people looking for a bargain, but it's a funny thing that whenever a truck breaks down in South Africa, it could be in the middle of nowhere. We've discussed this before. You could be in the deep Karoo, there's not a human habitation for kilometers. If a car or a truck with a whole lot of goods on it, canned things, Coca-Cola, whatever, breaks down, you know what happens, right? People just, out of nowhere, they appear.
Yeah, swarm it, yeah.
Swarm. So look at this quickly, because this was very disturbing to me. Here is a woman after a meat truck is overturned on some road here in South Africa. She's a very well-dressed woman. She's carrying an entire cow's head out of the chaos and laughing and smiling all the way, like she's scored a massive bargain. This is what Black Friday really looks like. Are you ready? Look at that woman. Wow. She's got a cow's head. She's dressed smartly. She's wearing a pair of black pants. She's got black top on.
And there's a traffic cop filming her.
Yes, he's laughing and filming her. But she's got an entire cow's bloody head in her arms, and she's running to her car, I suppose, to put it in the boot and take it home. Now, I know things are tough in South Africa. I know that things are expensive. Meat especially is very expensive. But the fact that this is what, and she's smiling, you know, she's laughing. She's scored a big bonus. You can see all the people in the background gathering around that meat truck. This is a strange thing. And I thought it was worthy of at least a comment. Anything to say about this?
There's always more to the picture, right? Now, does a bus driver get fired? Does the company now have to fire people because now they've lost huge amounts of revenue? It's just so short-sighted. It's frustrating.
But the also the desperation of so many people who will be, you know, lining up to steal because it's not your stuff. You're effectively stealing.
But that's just it. It's still theft, yeah.
Yeah, but life is so bad for so many of these people that they'll go and take stuff from an overturned truck or whatever and like run and put it in the car.
See, I don't even believe in that whole life's so bad, it's so tough kind of excuse. That's just a very convenient thing to just mask your basic life. You know, it's just...
That's kind of where we're going with this.
Exactly.
I don't think it's an excuse either. I understand meat's expensive. It's a tough economy. People don't often, they can't afford this stuff, but that doesn't excuse really bad behavior. And this, to my mind, this is really just a very sad statement of humanity. Mm. Because I would not, like if there was, I suppose it also depends on what's in the, if you saw an overturned cash in transit car with gold bars that had fallen out onto the street. Would you be tempted to steal those?
Yeah, it's a tough question because you'd think, cool, but it's not yours. It's just not yours. It's just a simple rule in life. If it's not yours, don't take it.
Yeah, I just think like this woman is, she's dressed reasonably well, as I said. Okay, so sorry. She's got to go to work.
Can you go back to that clip? Because you started out making this point. You could be the most remote place in this country and then suddenly there'd be a crowd. Okay, I get it. Cars stop. But there is a crowd of people. There's not a building in sight here. But there is a crowd of people and they're lining up to steal. How? Mm-hmm.
This was on Instagram. Don't ask me where it was. I don't know. I don't have any other details except actually the video that I just shown you. So I don't know what to make of this, except that to me it's a very sad indictment. Is she going to go home and change her shirt before she gets to work? It looks like it's morning. I don't know. She was obviously going somewhere when she decided to pull over her car and grab the cow's head. I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. But it does upset me nonetheless. I don't know. All right, let's talk to Temba Robin because he is back on the show. Hey, Temba, how the hell are you, dude?
Good, man. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic. I love the professional setup you've got going on there because you do a lot of voiceovers and videos, and I've been watching a lot of your stuff on Instagram. I don't follow TikTok, but I just want to play this for somebody quickly for anybody who doesn't know who you are and just let them see what you do. And you're not scared to even go after Cyril some of the time, which is very brave. So take a look
brave,
at
brave or stupid.
No, I don't think it's stupid. I think it's really entertaining. You've done some bloody funny videos. They've gone viral. We'll talk about those in a second. But just take a look at this quickly. Here's Temba with a truly Cyril experience.
Why, hello there, and welcome to the safari. Today, in the leafy green bushes of South Africa, we see a rather unsuspicious-looking couch. This, my good friends, is the species Parlopalus taxivanus. Much like any other premium couch, this couch offers a truly surreal experience. Sorry, a surreal experience. Comfort aside, the true secret weapon to this couch is its ability to store more dirty secrets than its distant cousin, the casting couch. 580,000 US dirty secrets, to be exact. However, to date, not much is known about the Parlor and tax evader.
Dude, I just love that. I wasn't going to play the whole thing because people must go and watch it. That's so clever.
No, thanks, man. Yeah. Good fun.
Ben is also a big fan of sketch comedy, and I just don't think enough people do it in this country. So I'm glad.
It's so smart. That's the thing. It's like you threw a casting couch in there somehow on top of it.
So there's always, we got to always put a little bit of bait out there for those reprobates of society, you know, because I think deep down inside we are a little bit, that's a little bit in all of us. So
Let me just tell everybody, because you've done so much that for people who kind of think they recognize you, you've worked on like 20 TV commercials, which is, it's got to be in this country, that's a record. You've entertained crowds from sporting events to corporate evenings. You've done 2 cameo appearances in separate Netflix series. That's pretty amazing. You're a seasoned quiz master. You've run Johannesburg's biggest quiz night of over 200 people weekly, which is probably the coolest thing about you, if you ask me. I think it's bloody amazing. I mean, all the stuff's cool, but that to me is really cool because I love general knowledge. It irritates me how few people know anything and they have to Google everything that you talk to them about. And quiz night's a great way to figure out who actually knows stuff. And then you also do all these hilarious TikToks as well. Very cool.
No, shut. Like, I've got a soft spot for quiz. So originally moving from PE, it's something that we never had down there. And one of the first sort of social gatherings that I went to in Joburg was a quiz night. And the first thing
You have nothing in PE. PE is like,
I don't know.
Beyond the wall on Game of Thrones. Yeah, beyond the wall. There's only wildlings there. There's nothing else going on there. PE is like, there's nothing. There's no entertainment. There's nothing ever happens there. People just want to move.
Yeah, no, it's in a sad state, but I think moving here and then going to quiz and realizing how little I knew about the world. It's like there's questions that you know, but you actually don't know, and so it gives everyone a false sense of security. And I think that's the thing, is everybody thinks that they're smart until it's time to access that information. Then you realize, man, you know so little about the world you live in. You know, South Africans especially, we like to be like, oh, you know, we one of the questions that I always find fascinating that I've asked people is which country on the African continent has more official or the most official languages, and every South African is always like, ah, it's obviously it's us, and it's not. It's Zim. I think they've got something like 13 or 14.
Really?
Yeah. And those are cool little questions just to shake up the ant's nest a little bit, and people going, wow, I need to jump into a book. I say that with bare shelves behind me, but that's only because I'm moving. I will get.
Oh, you're moving. I thought that you built that studio to look like, because it looks very professional there. I like this setup.
No, shot. Yeah, no, it's, we're going for a minimalist look, but that's, we're in the process of moving, so it's a bit bare.
I really like your casting couch.
Look at this.
So I had to lug this thing outside and then try and get it back inside again. And I've still never put the little feet back on because I had to take them off to get them through the doorway. So the things you do for content, guys.
Yeah, I have to.
Ben, have you ever done a pub quiz?
Lots, Gareth. I used to love quizzes. I used to host a couple of sports quizzes. And you're so right. It's because you definitely broaden your horizons. If you work in comedy or if you work in any kind of content, you need to know so much because you need to be able to like pull the piss out of something, or like just for example, the whole thing, like the reason I bring up casting couch is that Harvey Weinstein was one of the biggest scandals ever, right? And that was couch based, and you managed to trump that with Cyril. So just that reference there made that clip for me even funnier, because you were actually taking two things. It's like, remember that, this is worse. But you do it in an indirect way because of your knowledge.
This is pathetic. Yeah. Melissa says, we have an awesome established quiz night community. Mel from Rebecca. I don't believe her for a second. That's obviously, she's lying. She's a liar.
Maybe that's a more recent. Maybe that's a more recent thing. I have kept my eye on the quiz scene because I wanted to start something down in the GQ. But at least I can say with confidence when I had left, by the time I had left, probably about 5 years ago, there was absolutely nothing. So good to hear that the things have progressed.
Let's show people this quickly.
Guys, I'm going to be serious. If you're 20 or 30 years old and you're not yet a millionaire, then you need
to... what are you doing in my car?
Yeah, I'm so sick of seeing these people who are such losers trying to tell us how we can become millionaires if we'll just follow them or pay them some kind of subscription. Who are these people? And they're using other people's cars and hotel rooms that aren't their apartment, pretending it's their apartment. Such bullshit artists, such scammers.
The thing about scams, though, Gareth, I mean, I always think about this with these SMSs and the distant cousin who's died, and nobody would be doing this if these things didn't work. And it just goes, there's even if you're catching 1% of the population out there, no. And I think people at that point of desperation, I think young and specifically guys are at that point where, shit, you'll try anything, even at the risk of being scammed.
Well, you have to be a millionaire in South Africa. We interviewed two people. No, you have to. Otherwise, people don't take you seriously. Like if you want, you could have stolen all your money. And a lot of people in South Africa have. They're just straight up criminals. But if you have money, it's like instant credibility in South Africa. Because people somehow, they have such a high impression and such a, they attach such value to people who've made money. Who have money? Let's not say made. Who have money?
Regardless of how you acquired it, and we like to justify. Oh no! You know it's fine. I think you should never be able to justify money or excess money being made in a criminal way. Or you know, there's so many good ways to.
I'd rather not have money and not be a crook than be a crook and have money.
It's very unsafe.
But do you think you could sleep at night? Hey Ben, what do you reckon? If you were involved in some illegal,
I know I couldn't because I've seen too many movies and someone always gets you, or they kidnap your wife, or some like you got to be so naive and or just ignorant or dumb to think you can get away with it.
Yeah,
that's maybe I look too much into it. I'm not living in you know YOLO, I guess.
I know somebody who is such a crook that he used to hire his own private security, which must have cost an absolute fortune. Mm. But it was partly because he wanted other people to see that he had security because it makes him look important, right? Number one. You know how these people who are VIPs, they always have, you know, three or four bodyguards standing around them with like glum expressions on their faces and suits or whatever. And it makes them, it's all to feed the ego because actually probably no one wants to kill them. But this guy was such a crook that he had to hire security. And I asked him about it, and he's like, well, no, there are probably going to be people who want to kill me. Now, I couldn't go to sleep at night and have a pleasant, happy life. You, that was your question. I wouldn't go to sleep at night knowing that unless I've got some big guy in a suit at my front door, I'm not going to make it through the night. I'd rather just have less, honestly.
Yeah, but you also got to think, what was that person's life prior to that? It must have been really boring. And for them, that justifies them to feel like some sort of person of purpose and authority. Maybe that's the only way they get girls.
Yeah, probably.
The be all and end all.
And it's amazing how many girls, especially Joburg girls, will be excited by the fact that, oh my God, he's got bodyguards. But Timber, do you ever get blowback from these videos? I mean, especially when you go after politicians, do you get people like getting on social media and criticizing you and saying, oh, who do you think you are, taking the piss out of Cyril or the cabinet or whatever? Because people get very tense and upset.
Yeah. So I think one of the things about the writing style that we've adopted is I'll say things that are the truth. Without picking a side or something, there was money in a couch. I haven't mentioned whose couch it was. And so it's almost giving enough of a narrative that everybody knows what you're saying, but they've sort of filled in the blanks with truth and factual information that's accessible to everyone. And so I think with that sort of approach, I haven't deliberately gone out and said anything. And I think that's the cool thing about comedy, and the careful thing you have to think about with comedy is you got to ride that line so tight, and if you go too far, it becomes crass. And I think it's the same as I think a swear word in a stand-up set is quite funny at the right time, but when your entire set is just flicking and maybe consistent sexual connotation, it feels like you had something funny, but then you pushed it too far. So you just ride that line a little bit. And so far, no one's brought us to book holding thumbs. I mean, yeah.
Good. I'm glad. You don't need that shit in your life. Absolutely. You're just trying to make people laugh. Right?
I've got to get going. I was going to ask Timber one question. Bauer Bosch, how did you guys meet and do things together? Because I feel like this is one of those matches that's... It's brilliantly South African, and just your personalities and talents are so good.
Yeah, and I think it started off, I'm very much in the boat of, I get frustrated with South African advertising. I think we're quite lazy, and I get it, because we've been boxed in by rules, and everybody's, companies don't want to tread on anybody's feelings or anything. So it's allowed writers to become very...
They're so afraid. So it's I often blame the ad agencies, and it's not always their fault. Sometimes the marketing boss at these companies is so shit scared of doing anything wrong that they don't do anything interesting, you know?
Yeah. And that's exactly it. So Boer and his partner, Benny, they've been making some really funny ads. So I messaged him, and that's a funny thing. Our relationship isn't even a year old yet. It'll be, I met him last December, and I said to him, man, I'm loving the ads you guys are doing. Let's work together. And the first ad that he proposed, we worked on, I was shooting something else, so I couldn't work with him. So I was like, oh, well, there we go. That's your shot. You know, you guys will never work together. And then the tourism scandal happened earlier in the year, and I think we're thinking the same thing. We're like, we've got to take the piss on this. And from there, I think everybody's reaction to the two of us sort of teaming up was quite crazy, because we were on Newsroom Africa like the next day, and people were asking, what's your guys' campaign? You know, what is your problem? And we're like, bro, we just met.
Seriously, wow.
Yeah, and so we've just kind of, we try not to take ourselves too seriously, and we're just sort of potting along. But I think it's one of those things about chemistry that you see. If two click, they click. And it's been really cool. Great experience.
All right, Ben, I know you have to go.
I'm going to play
one more of Timber's clips while you make your way out. But thanks, Ben. We will see you next week. Have an awesome weekend. Yes. Cool.
Cheers, Ben.
Take a look.
Why, hello there, and welcome to the safari. Today, we encounter a rather mystical creature named the South African Cabinet. Named a mystical creature because most of us don't know what the hell is going on inside it. When observing the top of any cabinet, it's not unlikely to find a little bit of dirt. But in this case, we find remnants of a little arms deal. With the scientific name, the Geriatricus cabinus parasitus, it is not a great cabinet, but it is the only one we have. It does, however, play a rather important role, because inside this cabinet, there are an estimated 30 influential candles that are tasked with leading South Africa to a brighter future.
Dude! This is so clever. I love it. By the way, your David Attenborough voice is fantastic as well. And I've got to compliment you on those shoes. What are they, like zebra felt?
Yeah, exactly that. So they're my dazzling zebra, because a group of zebras is called a dazzle. So they're my dazzling zebra fellies from KZN.
They're lovely. They're fantastic. Very, very cool. Very South African. Hey? I mean, you're not going to get that in any other country in the world.
No, that's for sure. That's for sure.
Well, what are you? one of those people who, because you are interacting with everybody all the time and you're making all this content and you're doing events and you have to keep up to date with news, so you almost feel like you have to know what's going on in Russia and Ukraine and the Middle East and with American politics and, you know, China and all this stuff, or do you not feel that pressure at all?
I don't necessarily feel the pressure, I think, on a daily basis, but I mean, if I'm making content, if I'm making something to put out into the world, then I think it's super important to have done your due diligence in terms of your research and stuff. So I'll always play catch up, and I think I keep a relative pulse on what's going on. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think life is crazy busy. I've got two toddlers, you know, work's going really well. So, you know, blessed in that regard, but I don't really have time to watch a lot of the news. And for the most part, it's depressing as all hell.
That's the reason I ask is because I've got to tell you, I can't handle too much news in my week. Yeah. I mean, we try on a Friday, we don't do politics, you know, we don't do too much news. On a Thursday, I get to do a lot of that. And it's once a week is enough. Frankly, you can get all of that. I think about again how our ancestors would have behaved. And you would maybe only have known the news of your village. And you wouldn't have really, you know, there could have been, God knows, like some terrible fucking massacre four villages away. And you wouldn't have heard about it until, I don't know, maybe you would never have heard about it, but otherwise you would have heard like 6 weeks later that something had happened. It'd be too late. The you know, the dead would be dead. The living would have conquered the, you know, whatever. It would have happened. And you would have found out so much later that there's nothing you could do about it anyway.
Yeah, it just is like news.
I feel like a lot of news, we talk about this thing called compassion fatigue. Because you're constantly having to feel bad about an earthquake in Bangladesh or a, you know, building that's collapsed in Turkey or, you know, some kind of war somewhere. You're like, I don't have any more empathy to give.
Yeah. So I've thought of a solution to this, and this is just purely because I have some people in my circles who are championing everything, and like, you know, even moving into the public space, I've had to be quite vocal about saying, okay, I have two CSI elements. I can't save everything and do everything and be irate for everything. I think each person should be allowed three causes. And you're allowed to change it once every 6 months. And those are the only three things you're allowed to complain about the entire 6 months. And you have to actually do stuff about that. So if you pick children's education, conservation, and global warming, whatever it is, you are not allowed to complain about pit bulls. You're not allowed. And if pit bulls are more important than those three, then at 6 months' time, you get to swap one of your CSIs out. But you can't all be complaining about everything all the time.
No, it's too much, right? It's just too much. Stop it. You're making the rest of us exhausted. That is such a good plan. I think we must implement this immediately. This is why you should be minister of something. I mean, it would be ideal.
If there's a minister of fun times or something, I'll take it on. So.
Yeah, but I also think like you have to take life less seriously, not more. I see so many people online who also they get into an absolute state about something every day. You know, one day they're upset about Woolworths not giving you plastic bags. The next day they are campaigning for Azerbaijan. The next day they're doing an animal rights protest, and you're just like, this is too much for one person. So we're going to implement your plan. One thing per person from now on.
Do you think people get addicted to that though, Gareth? To being in that frantic state of mind of...
Yeah, they get it. Listen, there are two kinds of problem here. The first problem is that people are addicted to the attention they get on social media from being cross about everything or getting upset about stuff the whole time, because it gets you a reaction. I mean, there's one person I know on social media. He's not even a friend, really, but I've been following him, and he posts these things that they're designed to make everybody react. So it's clickbait, effectively. But he's a smart guy, but he finds things that are relatable, but he's really just trying to provoke. It's not evoke. He's trying to provoke a reaction out of people. And it's exhausting. Like, I see his stuff and I go, look at all those people falling for this. And he's getting a thrill out of it, because he's getting lots of engagement in inverted commas, but who cares? Because he's not monetizing it. This is on Facebook and Instagram, for God's sake. And it's not like you can make money out of that. So it's a bit sad. And the other kind of addiction is this addiction to bad news, where you get into the spiral of having to know everything that's going on. So then you're following all these stories. People are telling you what's happening here and there and everywhere. And you're suddenly getting all this information. And then you go under that into the comments sections and you start looking at, well, what are people saying about this information? And I think that can be so deadly because, you know, as humans, we have a capacity to have this many things in our head and not much more in any given day. They say that you can make a total of, I think it's somewhere around 40 or 50 decisions a day. That's about it. That's your ceiling. Yeah. So if you're in the shops and you spend 10 of those decisions on, do I want the chopped tomatoes or the chopped tomatoes and onion, or do I want the red apples or the green apples? You've wasted two of your potential decisions that day on stupid shit that you didn't need. And I don't know that humans are meant to have so much information. So that's just my take on it. And I'm asking you because, I mean, you're the kind of guy who puts a lot of topical stuff on. Here's some questions for you, though. Let's just quickly go to some of those. I think that's interesting. Carl says, please ask Timbo if he's able to monetize any of his videos, aside from the ads, of course.
So the monetization story, I think there definitely is a way, but I've always been of the mindset, I just want to create for the sake of creating. And I've, you know, if you want to start monetizing a platform, you need to be pushing out 3 or 4 videos a week. You need that constant engagement. I mean, that's how the YouTube guys do it. It's volume and consistency. So I've never wanted to be that guy, so to speak. And so I never set up my platforms correctly, I don't think. And even when I, you know, a lot of my mates have said, dude, just do it. So I get a little bit of ad revenue off it, which is nice. Yeah. But the potential or the spin-off work from that is immense. I think, again, we touch back on, we live in a space where, you know, everyone's super careful from an agency perspective. Coming up with new ideas is quite tough. So it makes a lot of sense to go onto a world like TikTok or Instagram where people are really funny and getting engagement and start partnering with those people and, you know, settling up. And it's a good relationship to have for creatives like myself. So it's not direct monetization, but the spin-off is immense.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because it's a lot of work producing these things.
Yeah, it is. It's nice to get rewarded. There is a fair line though that comes along, and I'm possibly at it, is where creating content starts to feel like a job. It essentially is. Don't get me wrong, that's how I make my money. But it gets into that job realm where you start to resent having to wake up in the morning and make stuff. So and I think as soon as you get to that point, you need to just reevaluate a little.
Well, I think anything is like that. Even if you've got a job where you're paid to do something and you're really good at it, but you get to a point where you're just doing it because you have to, you know you're not going to be producing great stuff, right? When you hit that line, that's not good. Have you started feeling like that recently, or is it something that's been going for a while?
No, it's more of recent. And I think it's just because other avenues of work have also picked up. So I think to be creative, and this is a strange concept for, I think, a lot of people to get, especially like the hustle culture guys, is to be creative, sometimes you just need to sit with a whole day with nothing to do and go and watch some ants crawling on the floor and, you know, let your brain be in a state to create. You can't be creative between an MC gig and a voiceover gig and picking your kid up from school kind of thing. It's the like you say, your brain's got to make decisions. And it's wasting all of its CPU or whatever on making the other decisions. So being too busy is detrimental to your creativity. Therefore you stop liking what you're putting out and things get a bit puffy.
I think that's such a good piece of advice there. And especially because this hustle culture has been, has been sold to us as the way to be successful. And I think there's so many people in South Africa who are just desperate to get ahead, you know, from that woman who was carrying the cow head right at the start of this hour to these guys who are you know, desperate to show off what money they have in that clip of yours, the guy with the car, just because they think that'll make their lives better and they'll get the respect that they feel they earn or they deserve from people. It's such a motivator, and therefore hustle culture has been raised to this like stage of I suppose human respect where people go, oh, he's a hustler, like it's a major compliment. But sometimes you need to take a break.
No, it is that. And I mean, even the motivational space is something. So I'm big on motivation. I love first thing in the morning, pop on a bit of motivation. But what I've learned to do is...
What does that mean? Do you watch certain motivational speakers? Are there people who you find inspiring, who you like to listen to? How does that work?
Yeah, so like there's quite a bit of stuff out there by like Jim Rohn. I think he was quite big on on entrepreneurial things, and he's got a lot of life lessons, you know. And I love listening to that in the morning on a podcast. But you can only take on, as soon as you've heard one good concept, leave it, because that you need that concept to distill with you throughout the day. You can't. I mean, if you've got an hour long drive, you could hear six good, amazing bits of information, but you can't process all of them, so they're just a waste. And the other thing about motivation is you're all amped up when you're listening to it, and then you go out into the world, the first couple of things go wrong, and then you just go, ah, fuck it, it's, you know. Motivation is dangerous in that hype up, the music, the way the guys speak, it's you need to get better, and you're in it.
It's like, for example, you can't go to church every day. For some people, church is their motivation and inspiration, right? And if someone's shouting at you like those preachers do, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, by Sunday, you're exhausted. And I don't think too much of anything, I think, if there's a theme that's going through this hour of the show, it's like too much of anything is a bad thing.
Yeah. No, that's 100%. Everything in moderation, I think.
Yeah. A couple of other things that people want to know here. People just love you, dude. Gareth. So Leanne says, as a minimum, I have to make 20 decisions before breakfast, and not even for me directly. I think this is why, for example, Mark Zuckerberg, who's not a great example of humanity in, you know, many respects, but the guy puts on the same outfit every day, so he doesn't have to think about that. It's one less decision to make. And that strikes a chord with me. I find that very, very well thought through. He's like, okay, I'm going to decide now on a day where I have some spare capacity, what did you call it? RAM, random access memory. And I'm going to decide gray shirts and jeans. And then I'm going to go to the shops. I'm going to buy 10 pairs of jeans and 20 gray shirts. And that's my outfit sorted out for the year. I will not be in anything else. And that's what he does. And he's one of the richest people in the world. So I'm sure he has to make important decisions every day.
No, I think that's 100% true. And I think old iPhone, now I've forgotten his name. But
Jobs.
Yes, Mr. Jobs. He was of a similar mindset. And it makes a hell of a lot of sense. If you can wake up in the morning, and not have to change your shirt three times because the shoes that you thought you had aren't there. Now your whole ensemble doesn't go together. You could save yourself an infinite amount of time, and you go out into the world confidently because you're confident in the way you look. If you rushed, you make a bad decision, you're in a shirt that you're not particularly a big fan of, or makes you look funny from the one side, or there's maybe just bigger guy problems. But you're slightly self-conscious the whole rest of the day, and that affects your decision-making, it affects every part of your day.
Well, there's someone who said to me yesterday, I had a meeting, and he does this thing when he gets too comfortable in life. He does little things, like, for example, he said, brush your teeth with the opposite hand. Now, I always brush my teeth with the right hand, and it would be the weirdest thing ever if I had to start brushing my teeth with the left hand. I didn't try it this morning, but maybe I'll try it over the weekend, because then I'm going to fuck it up and there'll be just toothpaste everywhere. It's going to be such a disaster, and I'll have to go really slowly, or I'll like hurt myself because I'll be too like, you know, scrubbing like a maniac or whatever. So I'm going to try that. But it's amazing how if you do a little thing like that and you change one small thing about your day-to-day routine, which is These are the things that we do every day. These are the things that actually matter more than those holidays once a year, or, you know, the renovation you're doing to your house, or the new job, or the new car, or whatever else. It's that day-to-day routine stuff. And if you change something in that, it's amazing how much other stuff changes.
Yeah, shake it up. So talking about the toothbrush thing, have you, I don't know if you're a showerer or a bather, a bather, no, as I should say.
Shower every day.
There we go. I think with water being the way, as scarce it is, you're a special person to take a bath.
But I got to tell you, like, I don't know that a shower saves that much more water. If I think about it, I don't sit, I don't stand in the shower for hours and hours, but
yeah,
there's a lot of water coming out of that damn thing. And I hear these people going, oh no, a bath is a waste of water. At least with a bath, once you're in it, you don't normally add to it, right? You're like in the bath and then you stay in there for a while and you get out. I don't like it, but I'm not so sure it saves you that much more water.
Yeah, just I think I'd be interested to have a look at that. I mean, I think you have special water saving ones, but those things, water saving heads, but those things cost the earth. But the thing I was getting to now is, I clicked the other day, every time I get out the shower, I dry myself in the exact same sequence, day in, day out.
Yeah.
And I was wondering. Yeah. And I was thinking, when you're saying, you know, start, maybe you brush with your left hand. I'm like, maybe I'm going to start drying myself with my right foot. I don't even know if I'd know where to go from there, but it's just, it's such a strange habitual.
End up getting into your clothes and you're still wet.
Yeah, I just dried the one leg and forgot to do everything else. But it's such a, like I say, such a strangely habitual thing that you just do the same sequence every single time. It's weird.
Well, George, who's going to be joining us just now, he's the CEO of Auto Trader. He says here, why do you wonder, have you ever wondered why I only wear black? It's for the same reason. And then Carl says the opposite. He says, I do not want to live in a world where I dress the same every day. How fucking boring. My watch strap matches my shoes every day. I don't want to be Zuckerberg. Okay.
I think that's fair. I think if you've got the time to prioritize that, then, and I think that's all it is. It's a priority thing. If that is going to make the difference in your day, then it's a priority. Therefore, the time spent is valid. Listen,
Temba, I don't know a lot of women who would be able to just wear the same thing every day. In fact, I cannot think of one. I don't think it's possible for women to wear the same thing every day. They would go, to them, there's an importance to, I was having this discussion just this week with Bakabantu, I think on Tuesday. We were talking about how I will never remember what you wore in this interview.
Mm.
Even tomorrow, if someone says to me, oh, I saw you with Temba yesterday, it's interesting you were both wearing like gray shirts. I'd go, huh? I don't even remember what I was wearing yesterday. Do you remember what you wore yesterday?
Yeah. No idea. Like, even if I'm looking for my car keys, can't remember what shorts I wore.
But girls will. And they'll even remember, they'll say, oh, that girl wore the same outfit last week, Tuesday. And you'll be horrible. I mean, as a guy, I go, how do you even know that?
Yeah.
That's like that's a power I don't have. It's like Superman being able to fly to me. How do you remember what that chick wore? I don't even know what I spoke to her about, let alone what she wore. Right?
or the levels at which, you know, two ladies wearing the same dress is completely not on. And one of my best mates, Ross, we pretty much shop at the same place because it's like super affordable. So
yeah,
9 times out of 10 when we're buying, we're wearing 80% the same outfit kind of thing. And we think it's the coolest thing. Like, the girls have actually threatened to start a sort of catalog of all the times we've bribed in similar outfits. And to us, it's the best thing. Like, we're like best friends, high five. But, you know, in the same breath, the girls wouldn't be seen dead. Like, one of them would go home and change if they
ever happened. Mortified. I mean, like, for a girl to end up in the same outfit as another girl at a fancy dinner or something, one of them will have to go home and change.
Yeah, but maybe it's that competition element of who wore it better that almost becomes the thing, I think, in that two people wearing the same outfit, do other people get critical and going, oh, she looks better in it, or...
Yeah, well, I think that's what they think is happening, but it might be what other women are doing, but I've never met a guy who even... Like, you really have to... Okay, so as a guy, and this is not something that we're proud of, but it just is what it is. We are not observant about that stuff. We don't pay attention to it at all. Yeah. And I know that, you know, you can tell if a woman is dressed beautifully, and I often will compliment a girl if she looks really good. And most of the time, girls dress better than guys anyway. So you want to compliment them. It's not like it's a hard, you know, difficult task. It's like, oh, I have to remember to compliment this girl. It's easy to compliment women because they mostly look good. Yeah. It would be very, very weird for me to say to a friend of mine who's a guy, like, oh, you dressed beautifully today. I don't think I've ever said, right?
Yeah. No, I think if anything, so we used to play this weird little game at Varsity, you know, still in the days where guys would take forever to get dressed, and there's the six of you, you're going to go out on the draw, and then you just pick one friend, and as they're getting ready to go to the car, you look at them, you say, oh, is that, you're going like that, eh? Oh, okay, that's cool. And immediate self-doubt, and guys like, well, what's wrong with you? You're like, no, it looks fine, man. It looks fine. But I think as adult men now, we're just like, bro, this is how I'm going. Take it or leave it.
If someone told me, if someone said to me, are you going out like that? I would just laugh at them. I mean, yeah. I don't think about that stuff at all. And even when, you know, occasionally, like, a woman who you care about, who cares about you, will say, oh, you know, I don't know about those shoes. Be like, get over it. I'm not going to change them now. It's done. Who am I trying to impress?
They're already on my feet.
Yeah, I can't remember the last time I went into self-doubt because of something I was wearing. It's such a waste of time.
No, and like I think, like you said, a lot of the time it's something that's it's romanticized in our own heads as opposed to what's happening in reality. You walk around thinking everybody's noticed the stain on the back of your shirt. No one's seen that. They saw you, your grimacing face, and wondered what's wrong with you, but no one noticed the stain.
Don't you worry though with the videos that you're wearing the same outfit in too many of the videos, or do you think about the outfits at all for those?
No. So for most of the safari stuff, I've always worn the same outfit, which has been sort of beneficial to the brand building. But now if I go and speak so I've been lucky enough to be invited to quite a few corporates to MC and do bits and that sort of thing. And it's great to be invited. You know, any corporate gigs are great, especially when you're an aspiring MC and that sort of thing. But I don't want to go in my safari gear. It's the worst.
And people, won't you wear your safari gear? Oh, really?
People were like, oh, please, can you come in there? And I'm like, no. I don't know, guys, because that's a character. And then, you know, MCing is a different character.
That's embarrassing. You don't want to do that.
Yeah, and walking through like Santon in a safari gear. No,
definitely. Not, hell no.
You're not getting to where you're going on time, that's for sure.
Oh, my God. I mean, do people ask you to do your stuff when they meet you in like a public place? So you'll be, I don't know, you're going to drop your rubbish off at the gate of your complex or something, and someone goes, oh, Demo, why don't you do that funny thing that you did the other day? I saw you on the internet. You did that thing with Cyril and that cabinet.
Yeah, look, I'll come out and say I always enjoy interacting with guys, and I appreciate people approaching me. I don't know how long that'll last, but...
those people that we're talking about now are a pain in the ass. Come on.
No, so the funny thing is they'll come up, and then it's never for themselves. Everybody always goes, oh, my husband is the biggest fan, or my wife's the biggest fan, or my cousin's the biggest fan. You are never, the person approaching is never the biggest fan. But anyways, and then they'll say, do you mind just sending a video to my friend Lynette? Or, you know, and so often I'll do.
Because I'll copy whatever you say, because you're a friendly, nice human being. I'm not. I just go, nah, don't care about Lynette.
Look, Gabe, like I say, I don't know how long it lasts, because slowly but surely you start to understand why celebs are the way they are. It is quite difficult to be overbearingly bubbly to every single person you meet, and then 100 people flog you down for ages. So, but I'll always try and be friendly. I'll try my best.
George, here's George Meany. We were just talking. Are you wearing black today? Look at you. There we go. He's wearing black. There we are. Good work, George. Are you in your garage?
I am in my garage because I have the GWM Oro Funky Cat.
Nice. What the hell? What is it?
It is officially, besides that little cockroach that they call South Africa's cheapest electric car, this is officially a car. Okay. and it's currently South Africa's cheapest.
I'm sorry. Were you referring to the Bajaj just now when you were being rude?
No. I wasn't referring to the Bajaj. I was referring to.
We have a very soft spot on this show for the Bajaj. Okay, we won't tolerate any of that.
What was the car I was referring to?
No, I don't know. You called it a cockroach.
Is the Bajaj one doing the one that's in vast numbers in Johannesburg?
Those yellow things, man. Yeah.
But
what do you need a bike license for?
Yes, yeah, it's petrol exactly. power. It's petrol power. Yeah.
All right. So, George, what is this thing? Is it a tiny little two-seater? Like, how does it work?
No, it's a four-seater proper car, Gareth. It's actually pretty good. I mean, I'll try and lift up the camera there and let you have a look. It's a proper car. It's
called an Aura?
Aura, yes. But its variant name is called a Funky Cat.
Okay.
So it's about the size of...
To be honest with you, at first sight, I don't love it, hey? It looks a bit odd.
I think I probably got the arse end of it in the picture, that's why.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe, but it fits that profile. It fits that small car profile. Remember we had the Ford car at one point?
Yeah.
That similar dinky shape. The Uno is similar shape. So it's well within its world, it looks like, from this angle at least.
Yeah.
But can I ask, what defines it? You keep saying it's a real car. What puts it in that realm of real car?
Well, it's got four seats. I mean, this is my own definition. It's got four seats. It's got all of the amenities of today's entry-level cars, which is aircon, power steering. It's 0 to 100 in 8.4 seconds, which is not a fast electric car, but it's faster than a 1958 Ferrari. It's still in that electric car realm. It drives smoothly. It's not top heavy like the Bajaj.
All right. Well, I'm not impressed, but I did find a picture of it that may help us to, get a better idea of what this thing is. Maybe I won't be so rude after showing people what I saw, which is the whole car. Because the back, it looks like Timber says, like pretty much any other car. All right, so here's a pic.
Gareth is...
Sorry, guys. I don't know what happened. I tried to load a picture and the whole thing just crashed on me. So here it is. This is what it looks like when George is driving it on the road. Doesn't look so bad when you see it like that, right?
No, it's they've stole the design. They've copied the design for the front from Porsche. You can see the Porsche nose.
That's
little
bit, not bad.
Maybe the Mini.
I take back my rude comments. Okay, so how long you got this for and who manufactures these?
So GWM manufactures it, and it is now officially in the country. So the Aura Funky Cat. This is the Funky Cat GT, which has got the little fin on the back, and it's got better wheels. So if you look there, it's got wheels with red. It's got these little red pieces of trim.
I like it. All right, George, you've won it over.
I think probably comparable to Suzuki Swift, if I had to put it into a category, probably comparable to a Suzuki Swift.
And price-wise, what are we talking about?
So this one is 800, I think it's 850,000 Rand, but they start at just under 700, I believe.
Sure. It's quite expensive, but don't listen to me. What do I know about cars? All right, George, what else have you got for us this morning?
So Black Friday is today. Now, I don't know whether everybody wants to talk about Black Friday or whether it's getting old news, but Auto Trader has 25 million rands worth of savings on discounted vehicles on Black Friday today.
That is worth talking about on any day, but especially Black Friday. Very good.
So if you go onto autotrader.co.za, there is a Black Friday tab. If you go and search through those Black Friday cars, you will get plenty of cars and buckies and even commercial vehicles for sale.
Sounds awesome. That sounds like a great place to start looking for bargains.
Yeah.
25 million rands worth of bargains. But talking about bargains, did you know that Warren Buffett drives a damaged 2014 a car that has got hail damage? That's why they call it damaged. When his net worth is worth 116 billion US dollars.
You know, it actually comes up, if you type in Warren Buffett, one of the first things that comes up is this car. It is such a terrible car. I mean, I'm going to show you a picture of it now. It's like a Cadillac, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Looks it's like a typical old man car, but it is so boring. And this guy is a billionaire. He's one of the richest people in the world. Temba, don't you think that's a little bit miserly of him to be driving this shitty thing when he could be driving the car he wants? Look at that. I mean, really, what an old man, what a boring old car.
Yeah, look, I think it goes back to, I can't remember who said it earlier, but saying they'd die if they had to wear the same thing every day. I definitely think there's merit in keeping things simple, but there's definitely a line. I've gone through a couple of cars this year, like sponsored vehicles, and then buying a couple myself. Haven't quite found the right fit. And it's always a thing of like, do I just want something sensible? But sometimes when you're driving around in a sensible car, you go, man, I want something a little bit fun.
Boring.
Just, boring. Yeah. Oh,
sorry.
No, I wouldn't.
I have a lot of admiration for Warren Buffett, but this is just, it's so sad that he would drive this thing around. So sad. And he still lives
How
in
often
the same,
do you think he drives?
He lives in the same house that he's had for the last, I don't know, 50 years as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does live in the same house as I think he might have grew up in or something, I heard. So 2014 Cadillac XTS. And to answer your question, Timber, he drives 3,500 miles per year.
So not a lot.
Yeah. So not a lot. And so, his reasoning is he doesn't like assets that depreciate. It's a good reason. He doesn't like assets that depreciate. And it kind of explains why the secondhand market for cars in most countries is 2 to 3 times bigger than the new market in most countries. It's because
depreciation. Makes sense. Okay, and you're taking advice there from somebody who really knows how to make money. So I'm not going to knock it. What can I tell you? All right, very good.
And then finally, Gareth, before we get to trivia, Portugal apparently has run on 100% renewable energy for 6 days straight.
Really?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
What is that, wind and solar? Because that would be quite an achievement.
So wind, hydro, and solar, apparently on the 31st of October, they turned on the renewable energy source for 6 days. Gas plants were all ready to use, and the entire country ran off renewable energy. And apparently there's 10 million people living in Portugal. I mean, I've visited a couple of countries in the world. I'd say there are two that I would live in, and those two are Mauritius and Portugal.
Really, George, those are your two countries. If you could live, if you were to live outside of South Africa, those would be the choices.
Those would be the choices. Those would be the choices. I think.
Why Portugal? I'm interested in that. Tell me why.
I visited Cashcai. I'm going to Portugal again in January. But I went to Cashcai, which might be a little bit of a false sense of Portugal. But the people were friendly. The sky was beautifully blue. Everything was green. Mm-hmm. It just seemed to be a vibey, friendly place. And it was pretty. It was almost like Cape Town times 10.
Wow. That's a compliment. That's a great compliment for Portugal. Okay. So tell me a little bit about this. Why are you bringing Portugal up in this conversation?
So they ran on renewable energy for the 6 days.
Is this? Are you being paid by the World Economic Forum to tell us about this?
Not at all. Not at all. Just a story we picked up on.
I'm just checking out. You know, you never know. You've got to check out where your people are getting their stories from and why they're talking about this stuff. I'm just checking.
What's the motive?
There is no motive. Well, I mean, I suppose the motive might be the two electric cars that are standing behind me. But
okay, but you've always been, to your credit, George, you've always been very big on electric vehicles, despite all my protestations to the contrary.
Yeah, Gareth, my reasoning is the climate is a secondary reason.
Yes.
My reasoning has always been it's just better, simpler, longer lasting technology.
Right. See, and then he's a thoughtful chap, this George. He's not just saying stuff for effect.
No, I can appreciate that. I definitely do. I wanted to ask, what's the take up on electric cars in SA? I mean, obviously, I think it's probably in a slightly higher, this upper echelon. Afford it, but aspirationally?
So that's a good question, Timber. So last year, the country sold, South Africa sold 500 electric vehicles. In the first 6 months of 2023, we sold 500. So there's a doubling effect. The challenge is exactly as you point out. These cars are mostly, except for the Aura Funky Cat now and the Volvo EX30 that will be coming beginning of next year, most of them are north of R1 million to buy.
Sure.
So you're looking at the premium segment for electric cars right now.
Yeah. Considerable capital outlay is what I call that. Warren Buffett shitting himself on that scale. Okay, let's play some trivia. Okay, you know how this works, Temba. You just shout out the answer. If you shout it out before me, you might get the point if you're right. If you don't, you lose.
All righty then.
So,
he's a pro. He's a pro, by the way. He runs his own quiz, so he knows.
Now I've said way too much. feeling rather vulnerable, but here we go.
First question: what was the pony car that featured in the movie Vanishing Point?
Ooh. Yeah, I think that's no point for me.
When I get zero on this one, I'm sorry.
When
sorry,
you say the pony car, like a Mustang or something.
Yes, 1970 Dodge Challenger. That was a pony car in Vanishing Point. Next question is a lot easier. In the 1960s Australian movie, what was the muscle car from Mad Max?
You know what? I'm not going to get this. Sorry.
Shelby Cobra. No, I don't know.
Close, but not no cigar. 1973 Ford Falcon.
Okay. Sorry, George. Very disappointing.
Just missed
another disappointment from Temba and I. Maybe the third lucky. Let's try the next one.
What is the name of the movie that featured in a 1970 Dodge Charger driven by Vin Diesel?
Fast and Furious.
Fast and Furious. No. Yeah.
Okay. It's the only thing I know Vin Diesel for.
Yeah, exactly. Me too. You still beat me too.
Fourth question: what car did John Wick drive?
It was also a Charger, no?
It was an American muscle car. Yeah, not that one.
I'm pretty sure that was like I was gonna say Mustang, but then I think it might have been
right.
A Corvette.
1969 Mustang. Yeah.
Okay, got you. Right. All right, cool. I'll take it. I'll take that point. Yes, I'll grab it with both hands. Temba's got one. I got one. Let's go.
Then what?
This makes me feel nervous. Whenever the quizmaster goes,
what is this, George? What is it?
What car featured in Dumb and Dumber?
Oh, the
Mutt. It was a dog called Mutt Cuts.
I love that car. That car was covered in fur, and it had a dog's face on the bonnet.
Yep. And the wee leg for the petrol, yes, for the gas.
Yes, and the piss leg would go up for the gas. But God knows what. It was like some kind of station wagon, wasn't it?
It was one of the big Chevy, another Chevy transport-ish kind of thing, or?
Well, I mean, it's an American movie, so it has to be an American car, I would imagine. It was a similar car to the one used in...
I'm not going to get it.
A Ford
Cross Country. Econo line. It's called a Ford Econo line. If you Google it, you'll see.
Okay.
Ford Econo line. Econo line.
Okay. Econo line.
Econo line. Yeah, there we go.
Oh, okay. I eventually got there, but I didn't get the point, so I don't care.
Yeah. I think a dismal performance all round. Nobody should be.
If this was your quiz, would you stop doing the quiz completely? Would you just give up on it?
No, because there's always one person who's got 100% at this point. There's always one of those guys who's like, can you make the questions harder? And everybody else is sweating bullets.
Oh, terrible. All right, George, thank you so much. I'm sorry we were disappointing on the quiz front. Some days you win, some days you lose.
Some days you win, some days you lose. Have a wonderful weekend, Gareth and Timber.
Yeah, Timber, nice to have you on, dude. It's always lovely to see you. And thanks for making us laugh on the social media. Very, very good to see you. And we will catch up on Monday morning at 6 a.m. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com.